Yeah, I think Jane Hodges has actually put a note in the chat about secure messaging. Jane, would you like to share your practical experiences? You've always been a leader on technology. You're running a genuinely remote only advice business. Do you want to share a little bit about how you've been managed to deliver these processes and achieve a pure? I know when you and I have been on sessions before, a lot of advisors have listened to you and assumed that you were running an execution only service, which could
Yes,
not be
no.
further from. So perhaps you'd like to enlighten us on how you're de continually demonstrating value using on the online services.
I think one of the points was made about getting people on the portal and who'll use it, and I just put a message in, is 100% of our clients use it. It's just about the advisor. It's like Ian said, it is not about the client. They will all use it if you lead them into it. And if they talk to you in any other way, then just reply to them on the portal. They will very, very quickly start to come in there. But we just find that we use the client portal for everything. They've got their valuations on it. We're sharing documents with them. We've started a legacy locker for things like wills and things like that on there. We're just doing everything we can to engage them back in to that client portal. And because of that, nobody doesn't use it. They all use it. Yesterday we sent out a new bulk message, new on IO this is, about the LTA certification, because I didn't know whether everyone would be affected or whether their friends would be affected. We sent out a portal message, and all of a sudden, half of my clients have come back to me engaging and talking about what I've just sent out to them. I mean, it's just lovely. We go on video conference whenever we need to, but actually the bulk of our clients drop into the fact that they love the portal and they don't want to speak to me. I don't know whether I should be offended, but they don't. And they just keep using it because it's such a good audit. It's covering everything. It's easy for them to see everything. So I just think that there is so much value in it. I don't even speak to half of them at an annual review, because half of them don't want to speak to me, because they've already told me all their information. They've already updated their fact find. I've already produced the cash flow model and the financial life plan, and we're debating things in portal messages, which is brilliant, because everyone gets to have that great audit and that chance to think through what they need to say. So I'm a technology girl through and through, and there is only one thing that stops your client being, and that is you.
I'm just going to come back because Paul Miller has asked a specific question of you in the chat, Jane, and I'd love you to address it, which is you use PFP. Do you find the lack of a native app on the phone is a hindrance?
IO used to have a PFP app, which was great, and it got lost somewhere in all their upgrades. I don't find it a hindrance, because I drag everybody back into the portal kicking and screaming, really. But ultimately, I've said earlier, it would be great if IO put this back onto a mobile phone as well. But I don't know if everyone's seen, but a lot of older people have really big phones, and actually you can get into IO. It looks really diddy and cute, and you can read your messages on there. So it's not impossible to do, but it's not the same as doing WhatsApp messages. So I do think that it would be great if IO could suss this app again, but I don't think it stops you. If you get it out of your head that it's stopping clients, it won't stop them. You'll just drag them back into the portal. I tell them all, everything else is insecure. This is the secure way to do it. It's auditable. You have a chance to think out your answers. I have a chance to think up mine. And you don't have to worry about my magic salesman's handshake that makes you do things you don't really want to do. You have plenty of opportunity to deal with things that, think things through, understand things, ask questions. Brilliant. Brilliant. Can't say better than our process. Love it.
Mike, did you want to come in there?
I was just going to say, Jane, I've sat on many of these calls with you and heard you talk about your processes and the fact that you don't have face-to-face client meetings and the fact that you do it all electronically and through a digital platform. And I've quoted you numerous times to many, many people about how it is possible to do this. So I'm fully on board with what you're saying and completely agree with you. And with things like electronic signatures and all that kind of stuff that you can do, I really do think there's a massive opportunity here for the advice industry to really take this on board and deal with it. Going back to what you're saying about the lack of an app, we were talking about this just the other day. And we were saying it'd be really nice to have a to have our own branded app on a phone where you click on, even if it was just to access a shortcut through your web browser to the client portal, because all the PFPs have, sorry, we're an IO user as well, I should add, as well as a FinPlan user, actually. But, you know, the ability to actually have an icon, a branded icon, which allowed you to access the app through your own URL, I think would be a massive step in the right direction as well, because you get that branding on the client's phone. Rather than saying IntelliFlow or FinPlan or what have you, you have your own your sort of logo on that app, which you can click on and access. But going back to what you've just said, Jane, I'm fully on board with everything you do there. And, you know, I admire it. I really do admire it.
I think there's two points I'd want to re-emphasize and again, come up a bit in the chat. One of them is if you're, and I see a lot of firms doing this, is only accepting instructions through client portals. That I've come across so many instances where that's been able to stop fraudulent transactions. You know, to me, that's a perfect way. And it is such an issue for any of you are who are not aware. There is now real evidence that cyber criminals explicitly target small financial advice firms. You've all come up on their radar. Because they, I picked this up from some work I was doing in the States, where they now have significant evidence that small financial advice firms are seen by financial criminals as an ideal target, because you have an awful lot of, you know, everything they would ever want to sell on the dark web about people's information, and you're seen as having relatively limited cybersecurity. And that's going to bring me to the next point, which is Gmail. Please, please, please. In 2008, the FCA wrote a paper that said webmail, they did, actually it was the FSA, that shows how long ago it was. They wrote a paper saying that they did not consider webmail, so that's Gmail, and you know, all the various other MSN, all of those things. The FCA view, FSA view was it's not significantly secure for financial advisors to do. And they said in that paper they would take action against, they reserved the right to come back and take action against such firms. It's one area the FCA usually do really, really good work on technology adoption. They're behind the curve at the moment relative to what's happening in the US. And I don't expect that to continue. They do watch what the American regulators are doing, and they are hugely clamping down on financial advisors. I know, because we see it through certain systems that we use, about 25% of advisors are still using webmail for communications with clients. It's a when, not if, the FCA cracked down on that. So I would urge you all in the strongest possible terms to move away, because it's something we need to fix in this industry. I'd like to come back, I think, to Anya, talk about the richness and value in apps and how they can be used perhaps particularly for ongoing client reviews. And also for you to talk about, if I can invite you, both you and Mike. That's interesting, because right, someone's just made the observation that they don't allow clients to use open banking and IO unless two-factor authentication is used. 100% support that. But can we actually talk about open banking and the benefits and why you should be using it?
Yeah, sure. The first part of your question, I guess, was about the use of portal. And I guess the we say portal, but we've all also been saying client portal. The starting point is it's for the client, not for the advisor. We get lots of benefit from it, don't get me wrong. From an operational point of view, it's brilliant. But actually, the client having access to their information all the time, you know, they have access to their banking, and I know we're not the same, but they possibly see us in the same way. So to be able to have access to that at all times is great. And I also talk about tech doing the heavy lifting. As the onus on us is to do more, it's not about everyone working harder. And actually, if lots of the things clients can self-serve because they're accessing their information, it takes away that heavy lifting and allows us to really focus on where we can add value, going back to that consumer duty part of it as well. It means that we can, I guess, talk to clients about the things that are important rather than going over the basics. I know Jane's a big advocate for clients doing their homework ahead of meetings and filling in that, because an advisor filling in a fact find really doesn't add the value. And I guess as we look at tech, just really understanding what we're using. So if we look at that for the review, there's so much available to help with the review process. I'm barely scratching the surface of half the tech that I use. And yes, there are other portals out there as well, lots of different ones. Until I get to the point where I'm outgrowing one completely, I'm not considering another one to throw into the mix to use less than half the functionality.
Right, do you want to come in on that?
Yeah, so I mean, from an open banking perspective, it's not something that we use greatly within Tavistock. Certainly the ability through the back office systems we have is there. You mentioned MFA there, Ian, as well, and two-factor authentication. I mean, I've done a lot of work around cybersecurity for Tavistock in the past sort of 4 years, in terms of, you know, making our security posture much stronger. And actually, MFA, multi-factor authentication, was a game changer for us, because it literally overnight stopped people being hacked and, you know, having their credentials stolen. Not we had many of those issues anyway, I should point out, but it's, you know, two-factor authentication should be enabled on all back office systems and every client portal, in my view, because it is the one key thing, unless you go passwordless, which is another conversation altogether. But certainly, in terms of the richness of the applications and the integrations, as Anya said, you know, lots of people have lots of different tools they use to do these things. You know, some are integrated, some aren't integrated. And for me, you know, we've got a number of tools that we use, research tools and analysis tools, etc. They're not all integrated. And for me, it'd be great if they were. But again, you know, we've got different firms do different things with their software. So it felt a lot, certainly, if I take some applications such as Dynamic Planner, for example, you know, I've used Dynamic Planner for years, but I use it for a fund research tool. But I think what they'd like to be is a CRM, because it pulls the valuations through. They want to produce the lovely fact finds and that kind of stuff. And what you end up with is two systems vying for the same market, really. You've got people like Dynamic Planner and people like IntelliFlow and 27 Tech, etc., fighting for the same application space, really. Whereas I see them as complementing each other, not replacing each other. And sometimes the integrations aren't as rich as you want them to be because of, you know, the strategic roadmap those different companies are on in terms of what they're trying to achieve and where their target market is.
It's probably worth picking up on MFA as well. For those of you who have cyber insurance, and somebody told me recently that there are only 4% of advisor firms have cyber insurance, which is pretty terrifying. And indeed, there is an assumption in some areas that your PI cover will pick up cyber risks anyway. Apparently, the views in the market now are, unless your policy explicitly mentions cyber risks, it's not covered. But I mean, and that is an area, I can't talk about it yet, it's an area that we're doing things to try and help members of the CDA. There's something I'm working on in the background at the moment, more news in the near future. But the view is, if you have a cyber claim and you haven't enabled TFA or MFA, you've got very limited chances of getting it paid. And I don't think we should forget the extent of something like 50% of small businesses that have a serious breach close within the following year. It's such a huge and constant issue to be aware of. So coming back to, I mean, this is a really interesting, coming to some of the data that we've had from advisors. At the moment, only about 30% of advisors, this is based on our advisor technology index, which is what comes out of the survey we mentioned earlier, only about 30% are actually using open banking. I really would urge everybody who has that capability to use it. The reason being, the banks, if we look back to the start of open banking was obviously driven by the Competition and Markets Authority. There was a parallel project called Pension Dashboard, which the banks at the time were all expecting to be able, at the same time as they had to make their information accessible effectively through you. And I think you should probably quickly dismiss some myths about open banking. Just using an open banking service doesn't mean you can see everything on the customer's bank account. They can control the data they choose to share with you. But by the same token, the banks were expecting to get pension dashboard data to enable them to make a big move into advice. Now, we had an announcement, I think, the other day that we're still not going to see the dashboard project really delivering until 2016. That'll only been a decade after I was originally involved with the Treasury on that project. But there is a piece of legislation called the Data Protection and Digital Information Act, which will extend consent to consumers to be able to say who can have their data. It's going to cause nightmares for life companies, platforms and the like. And actually, that's probably a good point. It's James Gillespie, you raised a question in the chat about why platforms need to get better at sharing data rather. Could I ask you to expand on that, James, if you're there? No, maybe not. Well, the point that was made, and this is something that I see happening increasingly, more and more firms are creating their own separate data lakes. So they don't just rely on the information that's coming through from the practice management system, but there's a move towards advisors, you know, get the best information from the best source. So, for example, in a lot of cases, the information from the platform will be the richest source of data. Yeah, absolutely. It is a very, very valid point on that platform. You know, a lot of platforms need to up their games on that. So I'm going to come. We had a number of questions come in before the event. When you registered, you could ask questions. The first one, most obvious one, if I can come perhaps to Mike first, where should firms start? If you're going to do one thing first, what would you suggest it is?
In terms, are you talking about in terms of choosing technology or in terms of...
Actually, James, can I just go back?
Of course.
James Gillespie's just appeared. I can see you on my screen. James, do you want to come? You've come off mute. Do you want to expand on your point on platforms? And then I'll come back to you, Mike, if that's okay.
Yeah, sorry, remoting into the meeting, so didn't have microphones turned on, but hey ho. We've always felt the frustration that the back office systems, they will deliver a system that can make sure that valuations are at a point in time matching what's on the provider systems. But if you're wanting to present that information to the client, you're missing all of the detail that the platform holds. You know, to get true performance on a portfolio or a model, you need to be looking at every single transaction that's taking place on that plan, and whether it's an addition or a withdrawal from the plan, etc., to get true performance. And if we're putting that into the client's hands, you've got to caveat a lot of that detail. You know, this is purely showing the current position and not showing that whole historic performance aspect on a plan, you know, and especially if you're doing blended models and want to show what each of how each of the models is performing, you know, and moving money between models, for example. You know, the back office systems don't have that rich data, and the only way to really get that into back office is to have a system that mirrors all of the data that's in the back office on the platforms.
James, if I can, Ian, if you don't mind, I'll jump in here. I attended a meeting, it might have been 12 years ago, 14 years ago, with the FTRC and a number of providers in London. And we sat and we talked around the Origo standards of, you know, what information could be pulled out. And it was made quite clear then they all had to work, or the certainly software companies had to work to the lowest common denominator. So whereas some providers at that stage, I mean, we're talking sort of before platforms, really, you know, some of those providers could give you the contribution withdrawal information, the fund history and all that kind of stuff. But because others couldn't, they couldn't kind of have a common standard. The common
and
standard,
they don't join that information up either. You can have your contributions withdrawals in your back office system and tracked, but it's very difficult to get those records per se, and it doesn't join it up with what's happening with the valuation side of things. And the two are disjointed in the back office system.
Yeah, and again, playing devil's advocate, you know, you could argue the providers are saying, well, hold a minute, we're spending millions developing our own portals.
Oh yes.
why would we give that information to the back office systems, so that they can, you know, the CRM, so they can actually, you know, surface that information for advisors and clients. We're actually doing it ourselves and we're spending money on that. Yeah. So if you think about some of the big players who are spending millions developing their own, why would they then, having spent that money, you know, discourage their own users from using it to use a back office system? So I've always felt there's a little bit of a disconnect there.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's what Dynamic Planner possibly are looking into, having a very maybe closer relationship with some of the data and being able to get that fed into their portal, for example.
And that's great when they've got a raft of providers that will give them that information. But when they've only got a small subset of the market are actually delivering this information, it still feels that we're a million miles away from where we need to be in terms of kind of getting that information.
And with the back office systems, it's having the confidence that the valuations are correct. You know, it's you're having to do a lot of work. I have to do a lot of work to make sure that the information we've got in that back office is accurate. You know, and there's a lack of tools to make sure that you are